everybody that you run into. How in the world do you think anybody's supposed to respect you? It's a brand new day. Respect yourself. Respect yourself. Well, there's a great bit of Joe Cocker on Mental Health Radio. Take it from us. I'm host Sheldon Brown, and technician Declan Karen is here doing his great job. Mental Health Radio is brought to you and funded by Framework Trust. And I've got a little Maori proverb here, which is very apt today because it's a beautiful sunny day. And it says here, turn your face to the sun and the shadows will fall behind you. So there you are, Maori proverb. Turn your face to the sun and the shadows will fall behind you. Well, today we devote our broadcast to two issues. We talk to Corinda Taylor, who is chair of Life Matters Suicide Prevention Trust, which is celebrating a prestigious community award for its work. And then we'll switch to Christchurch later in the show to talk to Nikki Mariko. And Nikki was the organiser of an informal get-together about the generic antidepressant Enlifax, a drug causing an outcry on social media, and we've already devoted two radio shows to the Enlifax controversy and the frustrating and worrying side effects for so many people who have been switched from either Arrow or Effexor antidepressants to this generic known as Enlifax, or many people are calling it Enlifax, or end la crap, or even end la shit. So that pretty much sums up what many users of this antidepressant feel about this particular generic drug. But right now we're going to talk to Corinda Taylor from the Life Matters Suicide Prevention Trust based in Otago. Corinda, are you there on the line?
Yes, I am here. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, it's it might be morning in the South Island, but it's afternoon in the North Island.
It is afternoon, yes.
That's right. Yes. So welcome to Mental Health Radio, and congratulations to you for the award presented to your trust. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that award?
Yeah, it was a little bit overwhelming because we just went along for the good food and to socialise and to learn more about other charities, and we really didn't expect to win an award, so it was a pleasant surprise, I may add. And it really is testament to all the volunteers who have helped us to get to where we are now.
So this award, who was it awarded by?
It's Trust Power Community Awards, and so it's all about the community, and you know, we've seen many other great organisations over the years also get awards, and it's all about people coming together and working together as a community, and especially in this area of mental health and suicide prevention, it is so important to belong to a community group, to feel purpose and to feel that you are making a difference.
So yours is a charitable organisation. How long have you been operating in Otago, Corinda?
Yeah, so we formed the 31st of July in 2014, so we're just over 4 years old. And as many people will know, starting a trust is not easy. You've got to find the right people, and you've got to figure out, you know, your trust deeds and you know, your goals and missions and visions, and develop, I guess, the trust to where it is today. And just a few months ago, actually beginning of the year, we were lucky to have secured our first premises. Previously, we worked out of cardboard boxes out of my garage
really?
On my kitchen table, which was a logistical nightmare, I may add. Now we are really proud. We are about 4 months into what we a safe, beautiful space that we call the Hope Centre.
Right. Yes. Was the Hope Centre acknowledged in this community award that you got?
No, I don't think it was, because when I did the application, you know, some people nominated us, but I had to fill in the application. I don't think we actually had the Hope Centre up and running. It was just the beginning stages.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I can't really remember if there was much emphasis placed on the Hope Centre.
So you rocked on along to this award ceremony. Did you not apply for, recognition in this Trustpower Award? You went along there?
Yes, we did. We did put in the application, but my expectation, I guess my focus is not on winning awards. My focus was totally somewhere else. My focus was on helping people in our Hope Centre and through our trust. So, you know, when the invitation came to go along to this award ceremony, I honestly did not think we were standing any, you know, luck.
Well, it's always
awards. Yeah.
It's always a good sign when you get invited along to something. I mean, it does enhance your chances.
No, everybody gets invited along. It's not like that. You know, everybody can enter. It's not like that at all.
Okay.
You know, you can go to any organisation at the end of the day, really.
So how many people have you got working in the Life Matters Suicide Prevention Trust?
Well, this is a good question, because it's a bit like counting chickens. It's really hard, because we've got a young volunteer base, and mainly university students. And as you know, university students come and go. We also have students from the Polytech, and we have people from the community. And they can come together. When we organise a big event like a street appeal, we can have up to about 80 people, doing work on a particular day. For smaller events, we typically will only need a handful of people. So it all just depends. You know, some people may only volunteer once a year on our street appeal day, and then others may appeal 3 or 4 times a year, and then we have our regular volunteers, which I think is probably a group somewhere between 20 and 30.
Right. So it's totally a volunteer organisation, is it?
Yeah.
You're the chair. Are you the chair of a particular of a trust of a few people?
Yeah. So I'm the chair, and we are a very small trust. And I'm also the manager of the Hope Centre, which we have now used to develop a peer support program specifically to help people when they come here and they complain that, you know, they can't get the services that they need. So we help them navigate the system.
Right, and advocate for them?
Yes, we advocate for them, and, you know, we make sure that they get the care that they deserve, basically.
So you mentioned that a lot of your volunteers are students. There's been a lot of media publicity about how students are experiencing mental health issues. Have many of your volunteers, yes, have they experienced mental health and have their own?
Some of our volunteers have, and others just want to help us to develop our systems, our policies and our training programs. But we, from time to time, we get students in who tell us about how difficult it is to access help. For instance, they'll go to the student health centre and they'll want the same day appointment because that is on offer. And they will be told, well, it's full, the appointments are full for the day, call back again tomorrow. So the person who is in mental distress typically can't get their act together, I guess, for want of a better word, the next day, and they'll phone in again, you know, after midday or whatever, and again told to call back the next day. And this may carry on eventually, and then they may eventually engage or be flagged and get into to get an appointment, only to be offered 6 counselling sessions and then to be booted out, and they could end up in a mental health ward if that early intervention is not handled well. Then they can't engage again with a free service, because some of them may need weekly or every fortnight may need some further counselling, and they literally can't afford to pay for a counsellor.
Yeah, well, so many people are saying that there isn't the funding for counselling and therapy, talk therapy, and that's why there seems to be so much emphasis on medication, prescribing antidepressants. Is that an experience that's touching your organisation?
And often people just want somebody to listen to them. You know, I'm not saying that you should or shouldn't take medication. That's up to the doctor to decide. But I think if you just prescribe medication and don't follow it up with talking therapy, then they may be a problem, because people want to talk. We're human beings. We need to connect with one another. So this is what we do here at the Hope Centre. We are training up our volunteers to become peer support workers.
So you're doing that training. What, you're doing that training in-house, are you?
Yep. Right. We haven't rolled it out yet. We're about to do our first practice run in about a week or two's time. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, how do you guarantee that those volunteers that are getting that peer support training are going to be around long enough to practice?
So this will be a robust system, I guess. I'm kind of putting myself in the shoes of a person needing help, okay? So I go and ask for help and I can't get help. I will become unwell. But if there's somebody, anybody in the community who can just listen to me, I may not become unwell, because it's a bit like first aid. So if you see the person with a broken leg and you've done a first aid course and you see the person is bleeding out, you can stop that bleeding and you can help them until the ambulance arrives, until they are taken to the hospital and that leg is set and the bleeding is stopped. So you can save a person's life. Likewise with mental health, you know how the stigma stops us from reaching out and helping people.
Very much so.
So I guess we want to just reduce that stigma and making it okay for people to have a place where they can come and talk about their mental health and to tell us about their problems, their difficulties that they experience engaging with services.
Yeah, so what sort of demand are you getting at the Hope Centre and you're through your Life Matters Suicide Prevention Trust? Are you overwhelmed?
Yeah, I feel overwhelmed. I do.
And
we don't get any government funding. So we totally run by volunteers and the support of our own community here. And we have nationwide support. You know, people donate money to us because, you know, we have to pay the rent. We've also got overheads. And it's a difficult area to work in.
Well, I mean, it's at a time when our suicide rate has jumped another 10% to 660, and you're trying to address the issue of suicide and preventing suicide through your trust, you've just won a fairly significant community award, and yet you're saying that you have no funding support, from anywhere other than donations?
That's right. Yeah.
So what representations have you made to, say, district health boards, the Otago
district? We have done nothing, and we are unlikely to get any support from the DHB simply because my history with the DHB, you know, my son died under the care of the DHB. So, yeah, I don't hold my breath if I were to ask for funding from them. And that is the problem, because we actually are keeping people out of crisis care by looking after them in the community.
Well, you're doing...
Ultimately, we want to have early intervention.
So you're doing the DHB a favour in keeping people out of community mental health centres or acute crisis, psychiatric crisis units.
Yeah.
Can I just jump in there? Corinda, hi, it's Declan here, doing the technical side. Hi. Hey, I just wondered whether or not the Lotto people or Mental Health Foundation people might step up with an application.
So we do funding applications, and we do go to the lottery and COG grants. I don't think the Mental Health Foundation will give us money, would they?
No, they're trying to raise money to keep their boat afloat, I think.
What about...
Exactly. I did, as a matter of fact, I did ask them for support about 4 years ago, three, 4 years ago when we first started up, and I asked them how they could help us, and I was told quite categorically that they don't have money to give to us, and I was saying, well, I don't actually want money, I just wanted some support. So, yeah, I don't think they will give us money.
Can they, I was just going to say, do they give you resources to hand out?
Yeah. There's resources we can use, yeah. And we often do use their resources.
And my last quick question, just to dive in, was if you were to do an application up to the Lotto Board showing how long you've been operating, what benefits, in other words, what sort of numbers of people you're consulting with, and even to show them if you can isolate down to, say, Otago or anywhere in that region, how many people have been lost to suicide, then you can say to them, hey, you know, we have changed that, or this is what we're aiming to do.
And we do keep statistics because we deliver a lot of suicide prevention workshops. So we keep all those numbers. And you know, the people that come through our doorstep, the people that interact through our Facebook page for us, because we've got like 21,000 followers on Facebook now.
Wow.
And so we get many, many queries on a daily basis. It's like a full-time job, just managing Facebook.
I'd keep firing off more applications, because I guess it's like throwing an apple at a tree. Sooner or later, you're going to hit it.
And
it's that positive determination that sometimes they think, oh, all right.
Here they are again. Let's give them the money. They'll go away.
Can you hang on there, Corinda? We're just going to play some music and then we'll come back to you.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Now you're going to ask me what I've got today. Well, I decided I'd get some songs on feeling good and that are, you know, suicidal related in a positive way. So the first one I've got here is from an Aussie group called Bachelor Girl. I think they're brother and sister, actually. The song is called Permission to Shine. You're listening to Take It From Us Mental Health Radio, broadcasting to you right here on 104.6 Planet FM every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30. Here's Permission to Shine with Bachelor Girl.
Yeah. with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and we're talking today to Corinda Taylor in Dunedin. She's from Life Matters Suicide Prevention Trust. She's the chair there and also works as manager of the Hope Centre. You're still with us, Corinda?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, there's some messages there. In that song, one I noted that I've been holding myself back for so long, and I'm going to give myself permission to shine. You know, are they messages that you hear in your suicide prevention work?
Permission to shine—that's a hard one because I think so many people are so traumatized that they often don't give themselves permission. But we want to give people hope, and we want to give people reasons to shine. And I guess, yeah, that's what we're doing.
Well, that's absolutely wonderful. I can't ignore your reference to, seeking funding potentially from the DHB. And I think you mentioned that you're not friends with the DHB due to what happened to your son. Is that the reason that you're working in suicide prevention and mental health?
Yes, that is the reason. I lost my son to suicide coming up 6 years now, and he was under the care of the Southern DHB, and we made a massive complaint about the care he received whilst he was alive. And then, of course, he died, and so it went all the way to the Health and Disability Commissioner, and that was a four-year-long investigation, and they found breaches of the code and some recommendations. And, you know, what I really wanted to see was a real change and a good outcome for other people. That is why we made the complaint after all, so that services can improve. But I'm really disappointed to say that the same old problems that I was concerned about when my son was alive and that we uncovered after he died, that those same problems still surface quite often in the work that I do. Yeah, so a year after my son died, I called for a public meeting. And I found myself in a room surrounded by many people. Some of them were from the mental health services, and they told me I can't start a group. And I guess that made me even more determined to do what I'm doing now. Yeah, so my area of expertise is definitely not in mental health. I'm on a steep learning curve.
That meeting you refer to, did you initiate that meeting and invite people to come along?
Yeah. So I placed a small advert in our local Otago Daily Times calling for a meeting, and there we were in a room full of people, and I called meeting after meeting after meeting, and then from those people I handpicked people to form a trust with me, yeah.
Dunedin has a pretty antiquated psychiatric unit at the main hospital. It also has something called Wakeri, which I don't think has any better reputation. I've interviewed people that have been in both of those places. They are 19th century sort of services.
Well, the thing is that mental health care is not therapeutic. You know, you go there and they basically just give you a pill and a pillow and expect you to get better.
Right, without any therapy. I'm sorry, without any therapy or introduction to counselling or creativity?
Yeah, just that human contact. It's like you can't expect people to get well just with a pill and, you know, there's a bed. Well, and you know, we advocate for zero suicide in the healthcare system. Nobody should die under the care of mental health services or health services from suicide, that is.
Well, I think it's about three a week, isn't it, of people who are under acute care who die from suicide.
I'm not too sure about those figures, but I believe you.
Well, I think it's around 150 if we believe the annual report of the Director of Mental Health. We've got to close fairly soon, Corinda, unfortunately, but what do you think is the key issue in suicide prevention?
I think there are a couple of key issues here. Well, of course, 75% of all suicides are men. So we need to encourage our men to reach out for help. And when we encourage them to reach out for help, we need to ensure that the help is there. Now, one of the key issues for me is that young man, 20 years of age, who was my son, who went asking for help, and they basically slammed the door shut in his face. That is a major key issue for me. That means a young 20-year-old man who asks for help is really brave, and to be turned, for them to turn him out 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, alone and unsupported, is just unacceptable. So I think we need to really have a serious look at our crisis care.
Can I just jump in there too? I was just going to say, on a couple of occasions where I had near suicide attempts, one more severe than the other, and it was on Christmas Eve, they literally just more or less said, oh, you can go home now, it's 3 a.m. And I walked home from North Shore Hospital to North Harbour, basically. And,
wow.
And, you know, and it's the follow-up, because it's all very well to go into a mental health ward. It's getting into the system to start with and anyone actually taking you seriously. And then once you get into that system, that's fine. But when you come out, you need those support services. You can't just say to someone, you know, here's a pat of chocolate and a cup of coffee, go home and relax. It just doesn't work.
So there needs to be good follow-up and a treatment plan in the community, and they need to involve families or whānau, which could be flatmates or friends. It doesn't have to be family, but there needs to be somebody else. If they're going to discharge you back into the community, they need to empower the communities to help our people.
And at
because
what price?
Ultimately, we know our people best.
And what price do they play? You know, when you've lost your son, it's like, at what point do the services wake up and realise we need to change what we're doing, because what we're doing is not working for everybody?
They will only wake up if our media shames them publicly.
Maybe that's because something that,
that,
you know?
That is the only way. That's what I believe, because they're not listening. There are no consequences if they mess up.
So
it's a no-fault system, a no-blame system.
I mean, we have this major inquiry into a government inquiry into mental health and addictions. Do you hold out any hope for change as a result of that? I think it's about the 50th inquiry, individual inquiry into the mental health system in the last, probably 50 years.
So here's the thing, you know, doing an inquiry, they all know where the problems are. And if they're going to come with only recommendations, then that was a waste of government money, in my opinion. They have to come with some solid law changes, and some things just have to be mandated.
Right.
And there have to be consequences if they haven't followed up on any of those, you know, so-called recommendations. Because we all know from the previous inquiry, the recommendations, some of them weren't implemented.
Mm.
So I want to see real law changes here.
Yes, well, we better leave it there, Corinda. I think we could have devoted our entire program to talking to you about your personal and professional experiences. Maybe we can do that again early next year.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, just wanted to thank Corinda very much, and congratulations for the work you're doing on a absolute shoestring, it sounds.
Yep, We run on the smell of an oily rag.
Right. Hopefully that'll all change in the near future. Hey, I'd like to thank you too for being very candid with us, and particularly with a subject that's so close to your heart.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, well, we'll take another music break, and then we'll come back to talk to Nikki Mariko, who is the organiser of an informal get-together in Christchurch at the Botanic Gardens in Christchurch.
This song I've got for you now, actually, it's Vanessa Amorosi, another Aussie Mozzie. And it's interesting, some of the words in this that she says is, you can bang your head, which sounds to me like what Corinda's been doing down there trying to get some funding. Anyway, you're listening to... if I get myself together, you're listening to Mental Health Radio on Planet FM 104.6. We broadcast here every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30. Here's Vanessa Amorosi with Shine. Now, we're hoping we've got Nikki Mariko from Christchurch on the line. Nikki, are you there?
Hi.
Oh, Nikki, okay, we've got you. Well, welcome to Mental Health Radio. Take it from us. And we have mentioned the introduction that you are the organiser of this informal get-together last Sunday at the Botanic Gardens in Christchurch. About the generic antidepressant Enlifax. On your Facebook page, or on a Facebook page, you called it the Christchurch Enlifax Group Get-Together. So,
I did.
Did you coin the Enlifax rather than Enlifax term, did you?
Well, actually, I saw that term in a Facebook page where I started getting a lot of my information about what was happening, and someone called it Enlifax, and actually there'd been a couple other ways people had described it, which were actually worse.
One I can't mention, and one was Enlifax,
so I went with Enlifax.
Right.
Now, the reason why I chose that, because a lot of people, their opinion is that it's been a bit of a farce in terms of how Pharmac and MedSafe have rolled out the change, so that's where that came from.
Right, so how did this get-together go on last Sunday?
Really well, actually, because I was well aware that some people might be a little bit anxious about coming, so I tried to make sure, you know, make it clear that it was very low pressure, just social. And it's one of the reasons why I made it outside at the gardens, you know, quite casual. And it went really well, and I know there were quite a few people that actually couldn't come, so I'm thinking of arranging another one. But one of the things I thought that was interesting, pretty much everyone that came quite early on when we'd met said that they'd actually been quite anxious at the thought of coming, which is nice that they're so honest. But I'm pretty sure my perception was by the end, we actually all got on well, and they got something from it, and a couple of them said it had actually been quite some time since they'd been out in a social situation, and that in itself was a big thing for them.
So you encouraged a good positive connection.
Yeah, I tried to keep it fairly lighthearted, to be honest. Obviously trying to be very non-judgmental, and it wasn't like we were sitting around in a circle going, okay, it's your turn to tell your story. It wasn't like that at all. People talked about their situation if they wanted to, just naturally as they were chatting, and people were just talking one-to-one. Sometimes we were listening in a group, but we often just talked about other things, you know, what they did for work, and they talked about their families. So it was quite wide-ranging, and it was about 3 hours, and for me personally, the time actually flew, and I have actually decided to organise another one, and I'm looking at doing that in early December. Oh, we can talk about that later if you want.
Yeah, yeah. And you're also on the Facebook page, which is called Enlifax Problems with Medication Brand Change in New Zealand. I think you're encouraging other provinces and other cities to put some of these get-togethers together. But you've mentioned a number of times to me the anxiety that people were experiencing. I mean, did any of the people who came to the get-together believe that that anxiety was directly related to the antidepressant Enlifax?
I guess it's quite a range of situations. I mean, some people, that's been an issue for them, you know, for a very long, long time anyway. I definitely think for some people it's either arisen or it's gotten worse. I know that for my partner that's been an issue. And, so it varied. I mean, there was one person there, you know, she's had anxiety her whole life, whereas some people have been experiencing that more recently. And actually some people, when they put two and two together, they've been experiencing heightened anxiety for quite some time. They just hadn't realised why.
So they hadn't sheeted it. They hadn't sheeted it home to the change in their antidepressant medication and prescriptions.
And that's right. And that's one that I just need to make clear too. I'm not on Enlifax or Aero. My partner is on one of those, and so I came at it from the point of view as a partner trying to help, and also sometimes struggling myself to handle it.
Right.
But, yeah, that was a situation with him where, you know, he had been deteriorating over quite a long period of time since he was switched over, but he didn't make the connection, and it's not surprising he didn't, and that's really what's been happening to most people. And obviously there'll be a lot of people out there that still have no idea why they're struggling so badly.
I certainly didn't make the connection until I went to see my GP, and I said to him, is it possible to switch back to Effexor? Is Effexor still available? And he wasn't entirely sure, but he thanked me for raising it with him, and he got on the phone immediately while I was in his surgery and rang the pharmacy next door, and they said, yes, it is available. And I said, well, I want to go back on it. And within probably 24 hours, many of the symptoms that I had been experiencing on Enlifax had completely disappeared, and that too, with the switch, I decided to reduce my antidepressant intake, and I mean, I've enjoyed very good health for the last 2 months since that happened. So, and I was only made aware that Enlifax may have these very serious side effects by by media and by this group, Enlifax Problems with Medication Brand Change New Zealand, on social media.
I would encourage anyone who, maybe if they're listening to this, it's the first time they've heard about it or they've been wondering what to do, that page you've just mentioned, because the reason we found out is we just happened to catch one of the earlier items by TV1, and I think in that they mentioned this page, or I started Googling, went into that, and there's a massive amount of information there. A lot of people belong to it now, and I can't thank those admins of that page enough. They're doing incredible work. And that's the thing is, there's two sides to the situation, I think, at the moment. There's trying to get out to people, like you're saying, through media and other ways to make them help, make them aware of what's happening and what might be happening to them or their partner or family member. The other side of it, which is this Endless Facts Facebook page, the core of it for that page is actually advocacy and trying to create change. So it is there for people to reach out and express how they're feeling and tell their stories. But they've been doing a lot of hard work for a long time. And they can, I mean, I can too, but it'll take too long now. And I'm going to set up a Christchurch Facebook closed group, by the way, and I will load some information. But that Facebook page has got files and photos in there about what you can do to help. For example, you can put in a CALM report about adverse effects you've had. You can sign a petition that's out there. You can maybe be part of a group complaint. They've done group complaints against pharmacies, but you can put in your own complaint to a health and disability commissioner. And there is information you can pass on that's already written up to help educate, say, your GP, psych person, pharmacy, whomever. It's already there. And it is quite hard to find it all if you just scroll through the page, but it is there.
Yes, well, that's Endless
Facts. There is another page too. So.
Yeah. That's Endless Facts Problems with Medication Brain Change. I think you have to... You have to register to be accepted on that page, but I don't think there's any issues with that. One of the positive outcomes is that it appears that Pfizer, who is the supplier of Effexor, which was the original antidepressant that Enlifex replaced, is now got a radio campaign making clear that Effexor is still available. One of the things they don't stress too strongly is that there's going to be additional cost if you make the change. But this, the social media and Facebook pages have been very helpful in finding distributors where the costs are quite low. And I think there are other options, Nikki. You could apply to WINS.
WINS, yeah, you don't have to be a beneficiary to apply for help. I'm not saying you'll get it, but you can try. And that's one of the key things I think earlier on I noticed is, they didn't actually tell my partner, for example, when he was switched over, or they said, yes, you could pay. And I think maybe some people thought it would be huge. Now, I guess it depends on your circumstances, but for him, he's paying that $30 a month. He's happy to. He's able to. But there was also a lot of misinformation about the prices. There was even one a pharmacy down south where it was, I think it was something like over $150. It does not need to cost that much. Yeah, in that page, like you say, is listed multiple times, various options. There are some online pharmacies that will send your prescription anywhere in New Zealand anyway, but there are some local ones that it's worth shopping around. I would say, because people are on different doses, but I would say as an average, approximately, probably about $30 a month, and the normal retail pharmacies will generally charge you more.
And your partner he's gone back onto Effexor. Is he enjoying some improved health?
You know, I would say it's not been consistently always on the up, and I think that's really important. We talked about this on Sunday, actually. I'm very careful to say it's obvious that people's journey back, how they feel, will vary a lot. Quite a few people have noticed positive changes quite quickly. Some people it takes longer, and it can be a bit up and down. And I have to be careful here because I haven't been on that journey personally, but I've watched my partner and I do feel like he's turned a corner, that there is hope. And everyone I talked to on Sunday, every single one of those people have come off Endless Facts onto, I'm pretty sure, their previous med.
Right.
And none of them are regretting it. And they were ranging from 3 days having changed back to 3 months, so quite varied. But they were all glad they'd changed, I'll put it that way. What I would say is for people to be careful when they get advice about how they do it. I think everyone, from memory, on Sunday, they had done a straight switch over like you did.
Yes.
And my partner did, and they seemed to be okay.
Yeah, well, I think the advice there would clearly be to consult your prescriber and get yep. advice from the prescriber, whether it be a psychiatrist or your GP. Mm-hmm. But your partner, Nikki, does he tell you that while on Enlifex that his mood and his mental health deteriorated?
Well, it became obvious when he, one day in particular, when he told me how he'd been feeling, you know, and I think it's very common, and it's something for, I guess, most families and partners, they can kind of understand why they don't want to talk about it, but sometimes they don't realise at the beginning that it's happening, and then they think, I can probably get through this maybe, but that's a big part of it is expressing it, and I guess one of the, if you can look at it, silver linings from this is we have had to talk through different ways of him expressing how he's feeling, if he's not feeling good. It's not easy.
Right.
And different ways for me to ask. It's quite hard to know sometimes when you're helping too much. So, yeah, we've actually gotten some counselling since then, and that's a good thing. So,
well, there is
everyone.
There is an organisation called Supporting Families, which is, established specifically to help those who are supporting people through mental health challenges. So, if we have listeners who are like you, Nikki, Supporting Families are there to support those who are supporting others.
Yeah, well, I'm actually seeing someone from there this week. So lovely person I've met before. There are groups out there. It might feel like there aren't, but and you mentioned one recently to me. Is it in the hat? I always forget.
Oh,
MAPS.
Yeah, in Christchurch, mental health advocacy and peer support. Very good group, and I think you could just pop in there and spend some time there or perhaps arrange to get some peer support. I think a very good organisation in Christchurch.
Yeah, and also EAP, for people who are working, some employers' organisations, they contribute to a nationwide EAP counselling service, which is free. I mean, you may or may not be eligible. Your partner can get some, and you can have a short-term counselling. So if you look at EAP online, so we did that as well. And I don't know what we would have done if we hadn't had that.
Right, EAP stands for Employment Assistance Program, and a very good program that many employers are hooked into. You've got any other comment about, your involvement sounds as though it's been initiated from your partner's sort of challenges with Enlifex. Do you feel that it's gained some momentum since you got involved?
Oh, I do. I mean, and what's really interesting, even in the Enlifex Facebook group, there is another one called the Enlifex and Support Group NZ, but that's more general. But this Enlifex one has already got way more members than is supposed to be the total number of people that would have typically adverse reactions. So we've already blown that theoretical Pharmac thing out of the water. But, I'm just so grateful that Heather and Sarah, another lady's name, sorry, I've forgotten, who set that up. The work they've done is incredible, and it helped me so much when I found that and went in and all the information I learned, and I thought, wow, I just got so much information from that to help me move forward and to try and help my partner, and I really encourage people to go into that. But at the same time, if people are feeling up to it, is to bear in mind that really what the best outcome would be if we can achieve change in how these kind of things are rolled out. I mean, some medications, when they change to a generic brand, it's not such a big deal maybe. But when it comes to antidepressants, I think Pharmac and MedSafe, they've put the responsibility on the pharmacies, and that's probably, they didn't work.
Well, I think Pharmac.
So we're hoping that'll change.
Yeah, Pharmac also made some rather strong assurances that there was no difference between Enlifex and the earlier effects or Arrow antidepressants. And quite clearly, I mean, even health professionals and the psychiatrist that we talked to, Rob Sheaf, he felt that there was clearly something that was different about this drug to cause this outcry against Enlifex. So whether this campaign will move Pharmac or not, I don't know. They claim that introducing these generics allows them to spend or to have more money to spend on other drugs. But if you are messing around with people's psychiatric medication and it's causing them to become more depressed and have worse moods, then that seems to be somewhat ironic.
Yeah, I must say that as some of us are making sure we say to people, we're not saying that everyone who's on Enlifex is having adverse reactions and that it's not working to them. It seems to be for some, but it really isn't for others. And on paper, as you say, it's supposed to work okay. And I'll be gracious and say that Pharmac and MedSafe believe that, okay, but it's actually time for them to wake up and go, it's clearly having a lot more, a higher percentage of adverse reactions than is expected. So it's an anomaly, but it's real that it's not working for some people. So
well,
that's how I'd sum it up.
Yeah, well, I think that's a very positive and strong statement, Nikki. We'll leave it there and thank you very much for your time and also for the work that you're doing down in Christchurch with the Christchurch Enlifex group.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I said in the page the other day, and I hope it doesn't sound too cheesy, I felt like the group on Sunday, we met as strangers, but we left as friends.
Yeah, well,
which
that's
really nice.
So that's a win-win, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, just a reminder that we interviewed Sarah McRae, who was one of the campaigners on the Enlifex Problems with Medication Brand Change New Zealand, and you could access her comments on the takeitfromus.co.nz page. It's an edited upload of that broadcast with Sarah McRae, and that's on Frameworks. Frameworks website, so that's where Take It From Us appears. Well, let's have we got a small short track.
Yeah,
there,
I've got a short little 3-minute jobby here. I was just going to say, while you were having the interview there, I had a look on medsafe.govt.nz and there's about 24 pages that goes right in through Enlifex. So if anyone wants to look it up and have a look through, it looks like it's got quite a bit of detailed information on there, so yeah, might be worth checking that out.
Thanks, Keith.
Okay, this song here is from a guy called Chris, I think it's Clayford, and it's a song called Treading Water. You're listening to Take It From Us Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here on Planet FM 104.6 every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30.
Not been okay. I have been down at the bottom, making mistakes. Maybe I'm followed by trouble when it was good. It was too good to be true. What can I say? Sometimes life gets in the way. Sometimes life gets in the way. All of these tears fill up a river around me. I'm pushing harder when the water gets heavy. Cause I ain't letting go, fighting to stay afloat.
Well, unfortunately, we've just got to scale that track down, but we've been talking about the antidepressant, the Enlifex. There was a news item from Radio New Zealand which said that New Zealand is the 8th highest consumer of antidepressants per person in the OECD. It says 13% of all New Zealanders aged from 15 over are prescribed antidepressants. There's more women than men, but there's been a 21% increase in the use of antidepressants since 2008. So that's 10 years, over the 10-year period. It says European women aged 65 and over were the highest users of antidepressants, with one in five collecting a prescription. One of the authors of this research, a psychiatrist, Roger Mulder, says, despite this big rise, there hasn't been any evidence of community measures of mental health improving over the last couple of decades. It sounds as though this confirms that we are very much focused on the medical model, medication, and that he is claiming that there's been no evidence of community measures of mental health improving over the last couple of decades. So he says it would appear people's psychological distress is at least as bad as it was. He said those with mild symptoms did not appear to get much benefit from the drugs, but those with severe, recurrent or melancholic depression, they are the people where antidepressants work best.
You can keep going if you've got some chemicals.
The Professor Mulder, the psychiatrist, says it does bring into question our current way of trying to address psychological distress in the community, that giving more and more people antidepressants doesn't seem to be a good strategy. So there we are, a study there highlighted by Radio New Zealand. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week at 12:30 on Tuesday.
Well, we've still got... You can have 20 seconds if you want to twiddle your thumbs.
20 seconds. Well, yeah. I'd just like to mention that Changing Minds, the consumer organisation...
You have to be quick.
Okay, well, it's annual general meeting coming up on the 3rd of December. I've yet to decide a venue, but that will be at 6 p.m. It could be at the Corbin Estate Arts Centre. All right?
Yeah, that's cool. Okay. I just say it's a beautiful day out there. If you can get out and get some sun, go for it. Catch you next week.